Welcome to Cinema Savants, your weekly dose of movie news, movie reviews, and the occasional rumor, with your hosts, Todd Vandenberg and Rob Steele.
We're back! Yeah, that's a Poltergeist reference, which, you know, it's kind of appropriate since the top grossing movie in the world right now is a horror movie, isn't it?
I believe it is.
Yeah, puns galore this show. Todd is back. He's not drowned, which is spectacular.
It is spectacular. Partly spectacular, anyway.
Partly. And I'm wearing F7 shoes. if you don't understand what we're talking about, just keep listening. It'll make sense as we go along.
Indeed it will.
Yeah. So, things we got going on this. We've got a lot of stuff to go over because actually we haven't been here for a while.
We haven't.
Between, you know, weather. That sounds stupid to call a podcast on account of rain. And then you look at how much rain it was and you go, ooh.
Yeah, it was a lot of rain.
Call it on account of rain. Let's see. We'll start, I guess, with the box office. Do you think the weather had anything to do with the box office, or was it just the fact that all the films that are out right now are just kind of crap?
Speaking of rain, it is making it rain. Now the box office has just been, other than one particular film, there hadn't been a lot of decent movies at all for, gosh, seems like about 2 months now.
Yeah.
And we'll get to more specifics on it, but one of the things I think is even more amazing about how well it's done, I think I'd have to stop saying, how well this particular film has done, that's a really long way to say it,
just a bit.
Is that probably not a lot of people in Houston or Florida going to the movies.
Oh, gee, why not?
So that's two pretty big markets that this film... Notice I'm not saying it, that this film lost out on. So the fact that it... Dang, I said it again. Oh! Anyway.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm about to go into a Monty Python skit. So, yeah, the fact that it pulled in gigantic numbers its opening weekend, and as stated in Variety, if it happens to crack the $60 million mark in its second weekend, which is... The projections are very close. That would be... Only the 21st time a movie has ever done that in its second weekend. Not horror movies, not R-rated movies, any movie.
It's a pretty good thing.
It's pretty spectacular. Yeah. They're looking at a 10-day total of $215 million. It's already the eighth highest grossing movie of the year. And granted, overall, it's been a pretty bad box office year. Like you said, not been a lot of great movies, been a lot of fan favorites. It's been feast or famine, basically. There have been several, obviously, huge movies and a lot of movies that did nothing. A lot of movies that absolutely bombed that were supposed to be huge hits or were expected to be. So you have competing Stephen King movies. And I would think heading into it, The Dark Tower... seems that this would have been the crowd pleaser. I mean, when you look at the headliners of the cast compared to the headliners in it, which are all unknowns, there's none.
Exactly.
And The Dark Tower, based on what, 37 books and 15,000 million words from Stephen King, and it is just based on the one book.
It's a long book.
It is a long book because it is Stephen King. And it does have the built-in thing, although they did have the miniseries, which, you know, people drew on that. Some people drew. But when I saw it, and I did get a break from all the fun Irma action, and after that was done, because I really needed to get out of any house at all, and saw that, and it was a pretty big crowd for a Thursday, and a pretty young crowd, so crowd that certainly does not remember the miniseries, unless they happen to catch it on Netflix or whatever it's streaming on right now, and probably didn't read the book because most of them looked illiterate because they're young. I don't mean it at all, but yeah, huge crowds for this movie.
I'll be able to contradict that in a minute, so don't panic.
Excellent.
If you're a millennial or whatever.
Yes, I have millennials in the family, and they are quite literate, as far as I know. I haven't had them read to me lately, so they may have lost it. Anyway, I'm going to hold off on the review of it until later, unless you want it right now.
Well, actually, I was thinking I was going to give you my daughter's review.
Please. Because, I would much rather hear hers than mine.
For her birthday, her friends took her to see It.
Nice.
Because she loves horror movies. Only one in the family, which is really weird. But yeah, she loves horror movies. Her friends love horror movies. They went to go see It. And they went, I guess it was Friday afternoon, went to the 2 o'clock show because they could. They're out of school. They're in college now. And at 2 o'clock, I knew they were going to start the movie, and I have to go pick them up at around 4:15. That's fine, because apparently they had a ride to the theater and not from. The reason I'm telling you all this is because I have more information on that than I do the movie, because I got a call at 3 that said, "Dad, can you come get us? This movie was utter crap, and we've left."
Wow.
Which, yeah. I mean,
they walked out on it. There
were just 4 people in the theater, and they were it.
Wow.
They said, "I understand it's slow. I know there's a build to Stephen King movies, but holy cow, there's nothing to this movie, and we are." Kevin fell asleep, and since he was driving at the time, I'm like, well, then he can bring you home. Because he's trying, dad thinking. But yeah, they got up and left.
Wow.
Was it that bad?
No, they should have stayed because it is a slow build, but it does get better. The odd thing to me about it is it is a slow build, but they should have done more with the slow build because there's not a lot of... Well, I mean, they go back and they do some exposition as to, oh, this evil has been there for a long time, and Pennywise has shown up in, like, old photos and even old illustrations and blah, blah, blah. But
like Doctor Who.
There you go. It's just not very compelling the way it's put together. I mean, there are scares that come early, and thankfully there's more to the character of Pennywise than just jumping out and going boo, which is what the previews make you think. He does have that charm to him, not nearly as much as Tim Curry did, but he does have that aspect to the character where he's being kind of a friendly clown that's creepy at the same time, because after all, when you first see him, he's sitting in a storm sewer talking to a kid and enticing him to come in.
I've got beer and chocolate. Oh,
yeah, perfect. Yeah, it's... To me, it's not that it starts out too slowly. It's that it doesn't put in enough background, which it almost seems, in a way, it almost has too much because it does start slowly. There are nice scares throughout that, so it's not like it's just an hour of exposition and, oh, my God, when does it start? I mean, the scares start pretty quickly. But overall, I'd say it's good, but not really good and not great. I mean... I'm really surprised that they didn't stay, but I totally understand because it is kind of slow. And again, a lot of times when you're younger, you do want things to get going quicker.
These millennials and their short attention span.
Yeah, exactly. Except that's not really true. That's not the case. I mean, the movie is a slow build, just like you said, like a lot of King things are. But for instance, The Shining has a very slow build, but it's really compelling throughout. Whereas there's not enough there to really just grab your interest and just hold on to you by the throat like a horror movie should. It's interesting, not saying it isn't, but I can totally see why some people might think, man, nothing's going on. Even though there are things, there's just not enough early on. It gets faster and faster as it goes along. The action picks up, but it's just kind of missing something. I'm not sure if the Pennywise performance isn't... No, it's the script. His performance is fine. It's not Tim Curry, but it's fine. The kid actors, they're all good. I can't think of his name because I'm an idiot and I should have looked it up. But the youngest where is his name? Where is his name? He is here, and I still can't find him. There he is, Jaden Lieberher. He is also in The Book of Henry, and he was that movie absolutely got ripped by the critics and didn't make any money. I really like the movie, and he is fantastic in that movie. He is fantastic in this movie. So the young actors are really good. It's just, to me, the script should have been kind of amped up a little. And I don't mean just jump scares or something, but there should have been more going on early. And despite the fact that, you know, you learn a little more about the kids as you go along, they're still, most of them are still just kind of like
one-dimensional.
Yes. Oh, this is the wisecracking kid. Oh, this is the hypochondriac kid. I mean, there's really nothing much more to most of those characters than that aspect. And you got 2 hours and 15 minutes. You should have developed those characters more.
Build them a little.
Than they did. And Pennywise, there's zero motivation. And, I mean, it's just, oh, he's evil and he kills people and only kids. It's like, and that's it. That's all there is to Pennywise. So there's not like a lot of depth. I mean, there's zero depth to the character. You don't get any sense that Penny, why he's doing it, if he compels to do it, if he likes doing it. It's just, for a character that should have a lot of depth, there's like no depth. So if you want to see a scary movie, yeah, it's a scary movie. It's, I thought it was fun, but it's not gonna, it shouldn't. Well, I'm not going to speak for others. It's okay. Certainly will not show up on my list of like the top 20 horror movies ever. Maybe not even the top 50.
How about if they have an extended cut that's coming out on Blu-ray?
I believe they do. And that might change things. And that might change things.
But yeah, that's all I've got left for this anyway. There's apparently an extended take on the pre-cliff jumping scene.
Nice.
And a payoff to the Stan Bar Mitzvah setup.
Nice.
Having not seen the movie, I'm not entirely sure what these are talking about, but that's okay.
Well, the cliff jumping scene, all that does is shows that the bravest character is the chick, which is what it was in the book and which it was in the miniseries. Well, that's cool. And she was. I'm looking forward to chapter 2.
Yeah, they're making the official green light has been given.
You think it's only made $200 million? The green light was given before it opened, to be fair.
Oh, absolutely.
Just because the expectations were off the charts, and I don't think they were even this big, but because there's the chance to pay off and find out more about these characters to see what happened to them, how they changed, etc. And one of the early casting rumors going around has been Jessica Chastain. And to me, I believe her name is Sophie Lilly. She is a dead ringer for a child Amy Adams. I mean, looks much more like Amy Adams. So they should be in their early 40s.
She looks like more like Amy Adams than Amy Adams. I don't know. I'm just
that out. Probably looks more like Amy Adams now than Amy Adams did when she was 13. But yeah, so that's the other thing, too. They have to get people in their 40s. Not that there's any shortage of actors and actresses in their 40s. Certainly not. But it'll be interesting to see how they cast it. And there's nothing's come out yet about that. So it'd be nice to see.
Once we hear it, we'll have it on the show.
Yes, we will.
Actually, I want to throw this out just because it's stupid and technically not movie related entirely. It happened to me last night, actually. I was looking for something to do because it was too early to go to bed. Didn't want to watch anything on TV. I downloaded a new thing on my phone, a game called Linguinis, which is kind of it's one of those matching games, but it's crossed with Scrabble. And I thought that seems like it would be like a fun little game. And it gave me something to do until I went to bed. What I forgot to do was turn off notifications on my phone. Now, the reason that I'm tying this into horror, because at 1 o'clock this morning, my phone made this noise.
All right, then. Nice.
So that's the sound my phone made. at 1:30 in the morning. Yes, I'm asleep. Yes, it scared the crap out of me. Of course, my wife didn't hear a thing. Why are you awake? Why did you wake me up? I'm like, it wasn't me. It was the phone. Made a scary as hell noise. And you need to get up because I got to change the sheets. I mean, this was freaky as hell. So that's my scary thing for the week. I don't need to go see it. And my review of the game, if you want to get Linguini's, you go right ahead. But turn off the notifications, otherwise you'll have to change your sheets. Just saying. So anyway, let's go ahead and get the bad news out of the week. Bad news out of the week. We don't need any. Out of the way. Harry Dean Stanton died.
Yeah.
Which was
that sucks.
Very sad. And I did not realize that. I mean, I knew he not a spring chicken. Fully yeah. aware of that. I did not realize he was 91.
Yeah, and I thought he was in his 80s, but didn't realize he was in his 90s. He's about, yeah, it's 7 or 8 years older than I thought. So, and he definitely been around a long, long time.
And he was in what, everything?
Just about.
You know, Red Dawn, Alien, Escape from New York, Godfather Part Two, The Avengers. He was the guy who gave the Hulk some pants.
Yeah.
No, if you go back, he was on Gunsmoke for, I mean, that's going back. Although, yeah. I did see this on the list, and I want to find out what he was on Laverne and Shirley.
I didn't know.
Wasn't expecting that. I'll have to look that up later. Along with this, there's two name things that came up with me this week. I saw an interview having to do with Marvel. And they were talking about, I've been calling him Kevin Feige. And apparently that's wrong. Someone called him Kevin Foggy, as in the lawyer guy with Daredevil. Or, hey, there's these low-flying clouds outside. How do you know how to pronounce his name properly? Because I have not heard him say it. And that just confused the crap out of me. It's like, ooh, have I been pronouncing it horribly wrong the whole time? I don't know. Goes with another thing. My daughter was doing a crossword puzzle with movies and stuff, and it said one of the questions was about the movie My Left Foot, which I, of course, have ignored. So I get on IMDb and I look it up, and I come across an actor whose name I'm really hoping is not pronounced the way it's spelled, because it's spelled Ray McAnally.
And that's a very weird way to spell that.
It is. McNally, I've heard, but never McAnally. Which, anyway.
Interesting.
Something else that I didn't quite understand this week is Disney released an update to their release schedule, telling us about movies that are coming out in 2018, 2019, and I think they went as far as November 8th, 2019. There's a movie called Nicole, which is apparently following Santa Claus's daughter. Okay, fine. Do you schedule going to see movies that far out? Because I'm free for lunch all next week. And I'm looking at this schedule going, holy crap, I did. And I understand that they have to have it.
Yes, but they do have to have it.
Wow. Really? I don't plan that far in advance.
Yeah, the internet is a news consumer, and so anything that anybody might possibly want to know, so that's why that's out there, because it's information. So, oh, okay, well, I got to post this. So that's why we know that, you know, in 2027, Hulk 7 will come out. You know, it's where that's the point we're at. So it's
weird.
It is very weird indeed.
Almost as weird as hearing Liam Neeson is retiring from action movies. Which, well Liam Neeson, he's just turned 65, I think, or something.
I was going to say he is Harry Dean Stanton's older brother, so it's about time he retires from action films. Although, no, he's not. The mid-60s wouldn't surprise me. No, I mean, in a way, it kind of does, but...
Just turned 65 back in June. And I am now going to go back and watch the first movie I ever saw him in, which was Crawl.
Good idea.
Yeah, Liam Neeson and Robbie Coltrane. And if you don't know who Robbie Coltrane is, it was Hagrid.
Yes.
Only you're sad. Shorter and less fuzzy.
You're a sad person if you don't know who Robbie Coltrane is. He's excellent.
He is. I really enjoyed him. I liked him in the Bond movies, but, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's going to pop up in the Star Wars movies at some point, because there's several left. And actually, this, I guess, goes back to the Disney release date thing, because Star Wars 9 was delayed from May of 2019 to December of 2019. Wow.
That's what happens when you dump your directors.
Yeah, they got a new director. J.J. Abrams is going to be directing Star Wars 9, so prep the lens flare machine.
Which is interesting. They are going... We seem to be going back to... We had a long phase where the studios weren't as important in a lot of ways, but it was more the directors were driving the industry. And now, especially with the huge franchises like Marvel, like Star Wars, it's much more the production company is back. You know, they're the ones who hold the reins, because in Marvel movies, I mean, I know offhand most of the directors, but most people aren't going to think, oh, wow, I really like that movie because this is the person who put it. Or who directed it. They just know it's a Marvel movie. Doesn't matter to them that Kenneth Branagh directed this. You know, it's doesn't fit. Just not on their radar. And really doesn't need to be. I mean, for just a movie fan, nah, I like that movie. That's cool.
Right.
And they're so production driven because they want everything to fit. It has to be within this scope, which is why we wound up getting Baby Driver sooner than we did. Because Edgar Wright didn't do Ant-Man because he didn't fit their vision. And Ant-Man was fun.
Paul Bettany? What?
Interesting. Anyways, this is the pun episode.
We told you there would be puns in this episode. Yes.
So you have pretty big name directors that are just getting dumped because, nope, that's not the way we're going. And to be completely frank, for the first time ever on this show, not really, they should dump the director. If the director's not going with what they see the movie should be, then okay, that's the wrong fit. We've talked about that before. It's like, right. Well, then why did you think it was the right fit to begin with? You know what they've worked on before. Duh. You know, if you don't like the guys who did the Lego movie,
Then don't hire them.
So it seems kind of odd that you would think you would get a different take than you did. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this happen more and more frequently.
Yeah.
This just isn't going to work. It's odd that it, in some cases, takes so long for them to realize it's not going to work, and you wind up having major delays. Because not getting the Star Wars movie in May is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So.
Especially with all the publicity and announcements and everything. And yeah.
Right. Getting the right Star Wars movie.
Big moneymaker.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But getting it right as opposed to...
Just throwing it out there.
You know, maybe this is off. Yeah, much better. So...
Yeah.
And you kind of have to trust at this point, because I'm not a huge fan of either of the Star Wars movies we've gotten so far. I mean, they're both really good. They're not as good
as the original trilogy.
Exactly, but they're a huge improvement over the Crap Fest, which was the second trilogy, so I'm not about to complain.
They weren't that bad, although I do have some news about them this week.
Oh, have they burned all the... No, never mind. What is the news about them?
Daniel Logan, who is an actor that very few people are going to remember by his name so far, he's the guy who played Itty Bitty Boba Fett in episode 2. Mm-hmm. He's in a new movie called The Time War. Has nothing to do with Doctor Who, which is kind of disappointing.
That is.
But he's grown. He's at least a late teenager now, because yeah, it has been that long.
Oh yeah.
All grown, he's playing a time warrior. The plot of this movie, in short form, is that the Nazis experimented with time, and now they have to correct all the things that Adolf Hitler changed when he went back and rewrote history. And they said, no, it's not a comedy, because it sounds like it could be. Really? That sounds like a comedy? That doesn't sound like a comedy to me. But that's where they're going with this movie. And near as I can tell, the only reason it's getting publicity is partially because Daniel Logan's in it, and we go, oh, look, Boba Fett grew up. And somehow the movie is narrated by Christopher Lee.
Okay.
I'm not sure how they pulled that off. But any movie narrated by Christopher Lee can't be 100% bad. It's going to be 98%. No, I honestly don't know how it's going to be. But it'll be an interesting movie to see if when a trailer comes out or something.
I do have to say it's interesting to see a photo of Logan, because it's, that's definitely that same kid.
You can kind of see it cool, in the but face. The rest
as
of
soon as you said it's narrated, absolutely. Yeah, the restroom is rather large. But yeah, seriously, the moment you said it's narrated by Christopher Lee, my interest in this increased by about 1,000-fold.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. That has potential to be cool. I wonder if they just went back through all his performances and just pieced it together from... That would be kind of a strange reading.
That would be...
It's all outtakes. It's all outtakes from...
As an audio Saruman. Engineer, that would be horrific.
And, and the Wicker Man. That would be great. And a nightmare.
You know, speaking of audio, and this really has nothing to do with our show, but I'm throwing it out there anyway because it came up in the search for news this week. The band King Crimson, right? Are you a fan of King Crimson?
Yes, pretty cool.
Okay. They're releasing a box set that has 27 discs in it. Now, I looked this up.
That's a lot of discs.
They've only got 13 studio albums. So if they somehow stretched each album out to 2 discs, they've still got a disc left over.
Outtakes, live performances, blah, blah, blah. I mean, what they're filling it with. That's pretty wild.
On.
And do they release box sets these days? Don't they just tell you, this file is this big. Have fun downloading.
Oh, that would be enormous to download. Even that, just audio.
Wouldn't it? That would be fun.
Although, speaking of downloading, and that would require the internet, which brings me to the Internet Movie Database.
Uh-oh.
Now, you've heard me complain about their ads before. What is their ad right now? The background ad... on IMDb. Okay, we're back to, I think it's Amazon Prime. I can't tell. It doesn't say what it's an ad for. You kind of have to guess. There have been some this week where I've looked at it and gone, and I still could never figure out what it was for.
It's probably the IMDb.
So this week,
I'm waiting for it to load. Right now, my connection is kind of goofy.
There was an ad on CNET on their downloads page that had the same concept where there's an ad as the background image. And you know what they had on this ad? The name of the product they're selling. So, dear IMDb, look at CNET, get the idea of what they're doing. Do it yourself, because I don't know what the hell you're advertising half the time. There was one this week that was a rainbow. It was a pretty rainbow. It was a high quality, high resolution rainbow. Don't know what the hell it was advertising for. I'm just saying. Annoys the hell out of me when they do things like that. So
just saying.
Let's move on.
I'm still waiting for my ad to load.
You know what? I'm going to recommend stop loading your ad, because we're losing your voice. Oh, dear. Which is ungood. So, anyway.
My ad won't load. Makes me sad.
This week, ABC has said that they are going to be rebooting the TV show The Greatest American Hero, which I enjoyed that show.
Oh, beautiful.
Which, if you haven't seen the show before, was about a guy named Ralph, who was abducted by aliens and given a suit that gives him superpowers so he can save the world. The problem is he lost the instruction book.
Yes.
Which made for a very original show, I think, because you don't see superheroes who don't know how to use their powers to the extent that he doesn't know how to use his powers.
A very fun show.
Which is why, you know, if you watch the trailer and see him flying through the air, but he's flailing, it's because he doesn't know how to fly. Which is, it was a fun show. Starring originally William Catt, Robert Culp, and Connie Selica. This time, however, they're not giving it to a white English teacher. They're going to be giving the suit to a 30-year-old Indian-American woman from Cleveland named Mira. That should make, I think, a very interesting plot twist. Because that's...
I agree.
Certainly not what I would have expected. And you know what? I don't mind the gender switching thing as long as you do something original with it. And I think this qualifies.
Absolutely. It's a great premise, like you said, because it's not explored very often, which is kind of unusual to not having it come back again and again and again. I think it's a very, very cool idea. I love changing up the casting. Makes perfect sense because, gee, you know what we need more of is male white heroes. No, not really, because there are thousands of them. So, cool. I mean, I like the fact. It ultimately, of course, is how will the scripts be? That's what matters. But right. I'm really looking forward to this because, again, this is not something that's being rebooted because, we just did our last version in May. Like, it seems well, there's so many of the reboots are just constant. Yeah. So this has been a long time ago. So really like the fact that this is coming back. If it's, I can't say if it's half as good, because if it's half as good as the original, then it really won't be very good, obviously.
Right.
But if it comes close to the original, this should be very, very entertaining because that was such a fun show. It was William Catt had a lot of charm. So hopefully this actress has just as much charm as he did. I mean, because that really made it work. I'd be interesting to see, too, who plays the Robert Culp type character, because he was a big part of it.
Yeah. Connie Selica was almost a background character at this point, which knocking Connie Selica. I'd like to be knocking. No, that's sorry. Yeah.
Too late. You're married. Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
She was. She wasn't that important, and that's something they can change, and probably something they will change, because in this version, the Connie Selica character will be a guy.
Maybe.
So. May I? Good point. Maybe not.
Maybe.
So that would be fun too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is to me, this is really cool news because, I mean, that's such a fun show. I mean, it's a very fun show, and hopefully this will be just as fun, just as lighthearted and entertaining because, you know, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of shows that are just light and funny and well done. There are like a lot of light, funny crap fests that are on, like Kevin Can Wait.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to good things.
Yeah. Well, how about Matthew Vaughn doing Man of Steel 2 while we're doing Superman things?
Yeah.
Would that make it more interesting for you? Because I know you did not care for Man of Steel 1.
Not at all. I didn't care for it at all. If they make Superman realize that it's okay to do things and save people, that would be kind of cool. I mean, we're past that point because he's not going to not save Dad because Dad says no. He's not going to, you know, break his promise and save the lives of a bunch of kids because, people might know what you can do. I was like, let's not that happen.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, the guy who did the, why am I blanking out? Kingsman. Yeah, right. That's very cool. Very, very cool, because those films have a lot of style, a lot of action. They're light, Warner Brothers. So the fact that they're going with him, to me, speaks volumes that Warner's may have finally caught a clue and realized, you know what? It doesn't all have to be the most grim freaking thing on the planet every time out. Superman is supposed to be the light character, Dark Man. Batman is Dark Man. Batman is the dark character.
But Liam Neeson retired from doing action movies.
Ooh, nice fill-in.
Thank you.
Liam Neeson would have been an excellent Batman.
Actually.
It would have been. And still could be Thomas Wayne in some incarnation, but no, let's not go there, because when they do, as you were talking about Flashpoint Paradox, they already have the guy that played Thomas Wayne, and he'll be excellent because he would be an excellent Batman in any way aside from that.
Yes.
But those characters always have balanced out light and dark. Optimism versus pessimism, or pragmatism, if you want to view Batman that way. And it just did not work for me to make Superman this dark character. It's frankly stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, what do people think of the Christopher Reeve version? It's because he's just a joyful character who enjoys being who he is. And yes, there were some angsty moments, of course. And yes, there was a time when he decided to change the Earth's rotation and move us back a day so Lois would be alive, which kind of things, well, you could go back even further and get rid of Hitler, but thanks for nothing, Supes. Anyway,
yeah,
that was actually a bad moment, but it's also kind of cool.
Actually, we'll even get to that bit in a minute, I think.
Excellent.
Did have a bit more casting news with the Titans series, though.
Nice.
I mentioned last week they were talking about having Hawk and Dove as characters on the show.
Right.
And now they've been cast. Alan Ritchson as Hawk and Minka Kelly as Dove.
Alan Rickman, what?
Not Alan Rickman. Alan Ritchson. Ritchson, only with a T in it, just to make it difficult to pronounce. I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with either of these actors, and I'm only peripherally aware that Hawk and Dove even exist, but it's news on stuff that we cover, so I'm passing it on.
And very interesting characters. I think very cool characters. I like the Hawk and Dove characters.
I am not at all familiar with them.
Well, I'm much more familiar with when they were brothers.
Well, yeah, the Justice League Unlimited version is about all I know.
Yeah.
That would be the one episode in season four. I don't know. Anyway.
But the new incarnation kind of carries over. The new incarnation of Dove still kind of carries over that dynamic, and I think that's a really cool... it's just a neat concept of Hawk and Dove, and obviously what they represent. And if you don't know what they represent, stop listening, because you're an awful person. Anyway.
How's this? You can listen to this, because this is really good news. Stan Lee thinks that eventually Marvel will, in fact, get the rights to the Fantastic Four and the X-Men back, so they can put them in with the rest of the extended universe.
Hopefully, while Stan is still around to do his cameos. You know what they're doing? They're secretly doing, and I swear to God this is true, although I have no reason to think that. They are filming cameos right now with Stan. They have like 80 in the can, so they can just insert them in for 600 years.
I can verify at least 5. He's not kidding. I was about to say, he's already filmed his next 5, so that's through, 2019?
Well, the thing is, they're set pieces, and they can be inserted in any film.
Exactly.
You know, so it's, you know, and actually, I really had no knowledge of that, but it makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Because they're fun little moments. Yeah, I think that's great. And talk about planning. It's like, well, okay, basically the founding father, and you got Ditko and you got Jack Kirby, but still, basically the driving force of Marvel. Let's use him while he's here, because he's fun to have in our movies. So I like that a lot.
Wanted to see what you thought about this, because I sent you an image this week.
Yes.
Of the new look.
I saw it.
Of Hellboy. And which is, you know, another comic book movie. See, that's my segue. I think he looks like Ron Perlman with longer hair. But that might just be me. They did a very good job of bringing back the other look.
Yeah, they did. But when you said new look, it's like, it is a new look, but it's not, you know, because a lot of times with reboots and remakes, and it's like, oh, let's change things up. And it's like, oh, God, no. I mean, look, Hellboy is 3 inches tall and he's green. He looks like Hellboy. And like you said, even more importantly, he looks like Ron Perlman as Hellboy.
Right.
He's even more ripped than Ron Perlman's version, which is interesting. No reason not to. So it's it's a little bit of a change, but of course he does. He looks like Hellboy. He looks exactly the way Hellboy is supposed to look. Like you said, hair's a little longer. It looks a little different, but it's a different actor.
Right.
Very cool. Makes me happy, you know, if we couldn't get Ron Perlman. But, I mean, realistically, you know, at some point, like Liam Neeson, yeah, you know, you kind of, you get the point where you're not going to be doing action roles anymore. So I'm cool with that at this point. I really wish we had gotten another Ron Perlman Hellboy. Well,
And Ron Perlman is apparently 67.
Yeah, yeah. And so I've only seen, and of course, I don't have my browser up to find out what his name is, but he was in Stranger Things. That's the only thing I've seen him in that I can recall, but he was very good in Stranger Things.
David Harbour.
David Harbour, thank you. Yeah, he was very good in that. And I'm very happy that Hellboy is coming back because I really like both of the Hellboy movies. So even though it's a different group, the creator is involved, that's probably the most important thing. Right. So if Mike Mignola is on board, should be a pretty good sign that everything will be fine with Hellboy. So I like it. It's nice, again, to look at a reboot or a remake, however you want to call it, or a reimagining or a re-cash cow. Oh, is that what they really want? Yeah.
Yes.
And say, this looks like this will be fun. This looks good. I'm looking forward to this, as opposed to, oh, look, here's the next crap fest, which will fail. So, very, very cool.
Speaking of failing crap fests, or at least the potential thereof, are you looking forward to Blade Runner 2049?
I'm looking forward to it, but I'm also fearful. there's just been so many, there have been so many miscalculations, let's say.
Yeah.
Especially this year. So it's kind of scary. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not like, oh, I can't wait, because I'm kind of afraid that, wow, that kind of sucked. So, and I know you're not a big fan at all of Blade Runner. I really like the original Blade Runner.
It's not that
Blade
I'm not Runner, a big fan of it.
It is slow-paced, et cetera, et cetera.
There's going to be an animated prequel to 2049 called Blackout 2022. Apparently it's being made by anime filmmaker Shinichiro Watanabe, who has done some really cool stuff like Cowboy Bebop and Samurai Champloo.
Very cool things.
The thing is, they made this big announcement. They said, here is a look at some of his stuff that he's doing for this show. The 2049 opens on October 6th, which is, 2 weeks from now. No mention of when the prequel anime thing is going to be released. That's my only knock on it so far.
Seems a little odd, doesn't it?
Big announcement, big announcement. Ooh, we forgot to put the date. You know.
Seems like the clock is ticking.
It could be a Christmas thing. It'll come out at Christmas. Which brings me to one of my favorite Christmas movies. Now, normally I am not into the holiday thing at all whatsoever, but this I liked because there's going to be a forthcoming Christmas book based on Die Hard. I am really looking forward to this. It's called a Die Hard Christmas, the Illustrated Holiday Classic. And I have acquired the first 3 pages of text. This is all written like a kid's book. So,
nice.
You ready for this? I'm going to read you the first couple pages here.
Please do, Uncle Rob. Please read to us.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and up in the tower, everyone was partying except one wallflower. John McClane missed his wife. Things just weren't the same since Holly moved west and changed her last name. He tried to win her back, but still she said no, while unbeknownst to them, there was trouble below. A truck had pulled up, and who should disembark but 14 men whose intentions were dark.
Ooh.
I want the rest of this, because holy cow, that's just awesome.
That absolutely sounds awesome. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
And it's illustrated.
You know,
it's illustrated like a kid's book. I'll see if I can put some pictures up on the website or something. or a link to where I got the information.
That's awesome.
From.
It really is.
I want this.
Which makes me happy.
Yes.
I want this too.
So
when you get your copy, photocopy it. I'll get my own copy. We do not endorse copyright violation and stealing intellectual property or real property.
Nope.
Speaking of Die Hard, and therefore speaking of Bruce Willis, have you seen the previews for Death Wish?
I have.
And what do you think?
I have no idea. I thought it looked... See, if you had told me that it was a new movie that had a new title and was not called Death Wish,
mm-hmm.
I would have said that that's a really that was a cool movie and I would have liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a reboot of mm-hmm. a movie that I'll admit I should have seen by now, but haven't.
Oh, you really should have.
So because of that, though, I don't know if I'm going to like the new one, because before I see it, yes, I'm going to have to watch the old one first.
You know what? I wouldn't. I would approach this as a new movie, and because if you watch the old one and this one changes enough, because from the previews, and previews, you really can't tell much depth of what's going on in a preview. That they don't have time to give you any depth. I get right. that. From what I see in the previews, it seems to be lacking the depth that was in Death Wish. So I would just take it as a new thing and then maybe go back and watch Death Wish afterwards. The original is what how I would approach it. Death Wish with Charles Bronson is definitely worth watching. There, God, I think he was in four of the damn things, and the only one worth watching is the first one. But there's a lot of character development because he's an architect. He's even though it's Charles Bronson, who was like one of the biggest action stars of the 70s. Yeah, he very much in this movie, he's very much like Liam Neeson is in his action movies. He's just a guy. Well, take that back, because Liam Neeson is a guy with a very specific set of skills. Charles Bronson has no specific set of skills. He's an architect. That's all he is. He's just a normal guy. His family gets mugged. Terrible things happen. And he doesn't just decide to, oh, I'm going to be an avenging angel. He's just emotionally broken. He's like normal people would be. And an event happens, and he just kind of happens to handle the situation. He didn't expect to, but he did. And that changes him, and that puts him on this path of, I'm going to take business into my own hands. But he gradually builds towards that. He just doesn't flip a switch and think, I'm like the stereotypical Clint Eastwood thing, and I'm going to take care of things. He's not Dirty Harry at all. But the character changes throughout the entire film until at the end, he's a different person than he started with. I don't know at all that this is going to have any character arc, judging from the previews. You know, something happens to his family. You can tell that from the previews, so that's not, I don't know what happens other than something bad. But I don't know if he just, okay, I'm going to take care of this, or if he follows that same path. I hope he follows that same path, because that's what makes Death Wish, the first one with Bronson, a great movie. Because it's a revenge flick, it's an action pick, but it's a character study. And it makes perfect sense the way that could happen to one person, where this terrible event happens and it changes him, but it takes a long time to change him. And I hope that's what this is, because Bruce Willis he can be a great actor. I mean, yeah. He has a lot of range. It's just most movies, they don't ask him to do it, so he doesn't. There's nothing there for him to do in this script. I really hope that's what, because this could be a great movie. If they don't do that, this will be a fun movie. And that's okay, too.
Right.
So, I'm looking forward to it either way, but I really hope they go with that arc, because that was just so cool watching Charles Bronson just being this guy and then gradually, you know, becomes, he doesn't have a death wish. It's everybody who crosses his path by the end of the movie has a death wish. And that's what makes that movie so good. And I really hope that this one does the same thing.
My one thing is I just wanted them to give it a different title. And I would have been better with it.
I agree. Oh, absolutely, I agree, because that way they don't have to follow that same path, and they avoid the comparisons, and they can just put, you know, okay, if you based on a Death Wish, you know, okay, and somewhere buried into the credits, 6 minutes into the end credits, based on the novel, whatever that Death Wish was based on. I'm pretty sure Death Wish was based on a novel, and they can just put it in there, and that way they avoid any kind of comparisons and blah blah blah. That would have been, to me, that would have been smarter, because I don't know that Death Wish has any built at this point. You know, how much built-in buzz are you fan getting base. Because oh, it's the new Death Wish movie. Gee, I've been waiting for this for 47 years. Probably right. not. So I agree. They should have just gone with their own title, but we'll see. I really hope. I mean, if it was a shot-for-shot remake, that would make me happy. That would be cool. You know, maybe not so much, because the shot-for-shot remake of Psycho is awful. But but they could follow. They could follow the plot very closely, and that would make me very happy. Because man, that was a good movie, and Bruce Willis in an action film where he's kicking ass. Eventually, at some point, hopefully it takes a while. It'll be fun.
Have some good parts.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I hope there are very few Bruce Willis wisecracks. Because to me, that's fun in stuff like Die Hard. But I would like to see this as a more serious film.
Right.
We'll see.
Speaking of really good and influential films, there was a list that came out this week that I actually really liked. And apparently a lot of other people really agreed with it. Because most of the time when you get the, you know, here's the top 100 films of all time, and you look at it and go, that one? Really? This one was different. This was the 70 most I'll get it out eventually. 70 most influential visual effects movies ever. And I think one of the best things about this list was, it was not in, here's the number one movie, number two. No, it came out in alphabetical order, which I think right. helps, because then there's not a, how could you put this movie instead of that movie? Well, because alphabetically, B comes before G, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think helped.
I just had a couple minutes really to look at it up until now, and I'm looking at it again. And my second run through, it's an absolutely probably about as perfect a list as you get. I'm sure there are some things like, why is that not there, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, Skype.
It really helps
you.
Too. Like you said, it's not ranked.
Yeah. There are some things that I think are a bit surprising that they're not there, but I understand it. The new, actually, any non-original Star Wars trilogy movie is not on this list. The prequels and the postquels, can we call them postquels, are not on the list, which I think is a good idea, because I don't, apart from, I think it was the war scene, the actual battle in Attack of the Clones, everything else we'd seen before, the way they did that right. battle was different. And I think it was good, but not necessarily enough to put it on this list. Let's see, toward the end of the list, Tron is on the list. Tron 2 is not. Because even if you don't like the story or the acting or whatever, the visual effects were awesome.
I totally agree. And to me, here's the big difference. These are not the best visual effects movies. These are the most influential, and I think right. that's why all the Star Wars prequels, postquels aren't on there, because they're not groundbreaking like the Star Wars films. And I think that's what happens with Tron and Tron Legacy.
Right.
The effects in Tron Legacy are great, absolutely, but Tron was you'd never seen anything like that before.
No.
And that's the difference. And I'm not saying Tron Legacy doesn't belong, but to me, there's a big difference between Tron and Tron Legacy. And that's why, I mean, with things like The Mask, which is not Mask, but The Mask, the Jim
right.
Carrey thing. And that was, whether you like the movie or not, some people love the movie, a Zack Snyder movie, by the way, and I think it's a really good movie. But again, the effects were different. And that's where the difference comes in, is that because they set new standards every time, which is why Citizen Kane is on there, because people think visual effects, Citizen Kane. Yeah, it's deep focus where everything stays in camera, and you can see an object which is a foot from the camera, and you can see an object which is 500 feet away, and it's all in focus. And that was a very, very innovative for the time. Yeah. So
that's why the Matrix sequels aren't in this, even though they had crap stories, but they had an awesome car chase in the second one. That's why.
It's exactly. Missed. And that's why the Matrix is in there, because of bullet time.
Exactly.
Which is, yeah, it seems like we're getting to the point where, you know, if they decide to redo Everybody Loves Raymond, there's going to be bullet time in it. You know, it's in everything. Life of Pi, which I was bored to tears with. I really did not like that film. But the effects were incredible in that film, considering that virtually the entire thing, except like, what, maybe six actors and a few scenes are visual effects. The original King Kong. Love the fact that the original King Kong is there, as is Peter Jackson's on here a lot, as he should be. But the Peter Jackson version is definitely belongs there. Anything of The Thing, which is great because it's practical effects. Again, this is not computer effects. This is visual effects. Right. And I love the fact that The Thing, as in the 82 version, the John Carpenter version, is in there.
To me, I think there's four movies that I would actually put on this list.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I would take off. Well, okay, there's right. one. Two I would like to take off.
Okay, tell me what the two are first. I want to hear.
Oh, no, we're going to go through the what should be there first.
Okay, let's put on what should be there
because
first.
Because the remove thing is going to cause an argument.
Yay!
I would put Dark Crystal on this.
Oh, yeah.
Because, it was a Muppet movie, but it was so much more than that. And there were some incredible visuals that ended up being used in a lot of other things later.
I wholeheartedly agree, because they're obviously big puppets. Oh, yeah. And the fact that they are obviously big puppets disappears within minutes.
You get lost in the characters. It's that
absolutely. Good. Absolutely. That's an incredible achievement. Maybe because it wasn't that influential, because no one can really pull that off except the Henson Studios, it seems.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why it's not on the influential list, but I would still put it on there. Absolutely agree.
What do you think about Willow?
Gosh. Yeah.
Because there were some great visuals in that.
I'm not sure. I would have to watch it again, because it's probably been 20 odd years since I've seen it. Offhand, I would say, from what I recall, sure. There were some great things, yeah.
One of the first morphing films, which I'm pretty sure it predated... I know it predated, like, Terminator 2, which was on the list because of the morphing effects. I'm all in favor of Willow. Something I thought was interesting, and I'm not sure which one to put on, but... there are no Star Trek movies on this list.
True. Odd.
I would probably go, and I saw this on one of the message boards and went, that's a very good point. Star Trek II had a lot of computer-generated effects that we hadn't seen before. And I mean, not just because that was the biggest of the Star Trek movies, but because it had those effects in it. I would think maybe include Star Trek II on here somewhere.
Which, by the way, was just playing and re-released at the theaters last week, which is pretty awesome.
Was it the 40th anniversary of it, I think?
I believe so, yeah.
And the other movie I would add, and I know you're going to disagree with this one because I know you don't like these movies, but... And I'm just saying the first one, not the whole freaking series. The first of the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, no, because I can...
Awesome visual effects in that movie.
I'm not a fan of the visual effects in the movies. I mean, I think they could have been done better, but I also think that was kind of a conscious choice to make it seem a little... there's kind of a sense of, kind of a sense of unreality to it, which fits in with the magical concept and stuff. So yeah, I'm definitely on board with that. Shocker.
Yep. And now for my removals.
Uh-oh.
Actually, I'm going to say, the first removal I want to get rid of is actually Back to the Future.
I can see that.
Because I'd replace that with Buckaroo Banzai, because damn near everything that came from Back to the Future was already in Buckaroo Banzai, with the exception of the flaming skid marks.
Which is, not exactly innovative on the list. Or influential.
Yeah, flaming skid marks. Let's put that on the list because of the flaming skid marks. No.
Yeah.
And, all right, now the one that's going to spark an argument, because I know you like this movie.
Well, let me first add one.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
Before we get into an argument and the show's over forever.
Yep.
1933, The Invisible Man. The Invisible Man, where he unwraps the bandages, and he's not there, and it's 1933.
I thought that was on the list. It's not on the list, is it?
It's not on the list. I was just flipping through, and I'm like, what? Really? Wow. And again, maybe they felt, well, it wasn't influential, but I think it is, because it sets the stage for all these in-camera tricks.
Yes.
And basically, it's green screen, blue screen. That's how they did it. And I was kind of shocked that that wasn't there. So again, not knocking the list, but because this is really well done compared to a lot of these things that you see. Anyway, back to removals.
Like what you said, The Invisible Man, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. I had to look that movie up because I didn't know what the hell this was. Sean Connery and leprechauns.
Sean Connery and leprechauns, exactly. And their leprechauns are little.
It's all green screen and camera angles, like Lord of the Rings, only in, what was this, 1958?
Right. Yeah. And it's not as well done, obviously, as Lord of the Rings, but it's the same technology. And it's a fun movie, by the way. Definitely a fun movie. It's cool.
Yeah.
I totally can see that.
On the list. And now...
Anyway. The show ending moment.
And now to review. Because I don't... I went back and watched this... Well, I skimmed through the movie again.
Yes.
And apart from the molten steel version of the Warner Brothers logo, I did not see anything in Mad Max Fury Road that required it to be put on this list.
No, because I agree.
Everything else I've seen in other movies.
I agree. I like the movie a lot. You don't care for it at all. And I really, really love the movie. But I don't see anything influential. Now, in Mad Max, I could see the inclusion of Mad Max much more than, and not really, because it's just an extended car chase movie.
Right.
But no, and maybe they're thinking of some technical aspect that I'm not thinking of as far as the depth of field or whatever. But no, I really don't see the context for that. It makes me curious as to what exactly they were looking at, because I really enjoy the movie, but that doesn't mean it belongs on an influential list of effects. To me,
the reason I'm told it was on the list was because they didn't do computer generated effects. They actually endangered people's lives by making all the car wrecks real.
Oh, well, sort of like Harold Lloyd did back in the 20s, and Buster Keaton did before Harold Lloyd. I mean, no, that's not influential.
No. Everything I saw in Mad Max Fury Road, I also saw in Beyond Thunderdome, only now it's in 1080p.
Yeah, talk to, if you want to talk about real effects, and talk to Christopher Nolan, which is why Inception is on here, because so much of it, everything they can do in practical effects, he did in practical effects. Dunkirk, there's no green screen in all the the dogfights in Dunkirk. Those are all Spitfires from the 40s versus Fokkers from the 40s, and they have cameras on the wings. There's no computer generated effects in those dogfights.
Now, actually, if that's what we're talking about with this list, should there not be a Jackie Chan movie on this list?
He is the living visual. Yes. But if you're going to go that route, Jackie Chan should be his own category almost. But yeah, I totally agree. Mad Max Fury Road, I don't see why it's on the list. I mean, I really enjoy it, but there's nothing
Yeah, I went back through it and went. Charlize Theron's arm, which of course showed more emotion in that mechanical arm than she showed in the entirety of Prometheus.
hey, they really cut her arm off, so you know, practical effects.
Oh well.
Yeah, that shouldn't be on there.
What you're going with, and that's why Forrest Gump's on the list, because they chopped off Gary Sinise's legs.
And I am glad to see Forrest Gump on there. Yes. I think it's awesome that Gertie the Dinosaur is on there, just like one of the first smoothly animated films. That's pretty very, very cool. Babe, I love the fact that it's on there because it's the best example, early example of talking animals where it actually matches perfectly so well. And God, that's a great movie. It's like the perfect family movie.
I'm going to go to sleep.
And there was another one on here that I was happy to see that people typically probably wouldn't think of as, well, okay, Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. People definitely think of it as special effects, but I'm thrilled to see that it's on there because stop motion animation. And it's, I don't know that I would actually put that on there as influential because Harryhausen had been doing that since he was an assistant on King Kong in the 30s, but it's kind of the height of it. So I can see putting it on there because it's so beautifully done. War of the Worlds, blah, blah, blah. I guess the one thing that I would throw out that I was pleased to see that on there as opposed to just is Forbidden Planet. Forbidden Planet is a movie that's a fantastic movie based on Shakespeare's The Tempest. Somehow, this is like one of the movies that absolutely they should reboot. It's, let's see, 61 years old at this point. The special effects in this, a lot of it is matte painting, but my God, it's so well done. And the monster of the id, and it's this electrical creature, and that's all animated, but it's just, it's seamless. It's beautiful, especially for the 50s. No one has gone back and revisited that as something, as a project to do is absolutely beyond me. I mean, they did Lost in Space and they didn't do this. I mean, come on. Yeah. But then again, I'm afraid they would redo it and make it another crap fest. So that's just leave it alone. I'll just watch this one again. But it's a really cool list because there are some films in there that you don't think of as...
Young Sherlock Holmes, you don't immediately think of as good visual effects. But then you watch it again and you go, you know what?
The Stained Glass Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that
Attack of the Cupcakes.
Yeah, very fun movie. Very cool movie. Very, and like groundbreaking visual effects. That's what this is all about.
Exactly.
And totally on board with your suggestions for removals and additions.
Wow.
Those are all... Yeah, I know, you're shocked. Just because I really like a movie doesn't mean, those effects were groundbreaking. I don't... Like I said, there has to be something missing from why they included Mad Max Fury Road, unless it really was. They just thought, well, it's all practical effects except for the sandstorm, unless he really generated a sandstorm. Now, if he really generated that sandstorm, I'm impressed. I'm impressed now.
If you'd like to comment about any of this, go ahead and email us, cinemasavants@coil.us. We have an email address. Haha.
We do.
Let us know what you think.
And whatever you do, don't use Skype to connect to send your text either. This while, not today.
We apologize for any rough cuts in this episode.
I'm guessing it's Irma's fault, and I'll just say that.
I'm going to be editing later. Okay, last thing that goes with this list, and probably with the show today. Did you ever get around to seeing Valerian?
I did not. Did you?
No.
Okay, good.
So
I'm happy for you.
No list inclusion for you. That's okay. No one else saw it either.
Yeah, really.
Oy. And on that note, I think we're going to end the show now because I'm going to need to go do editing.
I think that's a great idea.
Have a good week, everybody.
Mario! Oompa! Ride!
Do you think they would let me live in Montana?
I was thinking of the immortal words of Socrates, who said, I drank what?
Man, we have a weird job. It's shameful, but it's a living.
Darn, that's the end.